Hi, and welcome back to the Coffee House Theater Company podcast.
Boom. Proud of you.
Yep. That was my first time getting it right in probably the last 2 months.
Which is sad because we're well into season two at this
point. I know.
Point.
That's really sad, but here we are.
I'm speaking of episodes and being well into season two. Aaron and I suck.
Yeah.
So let me tell you a little story. We recorded an episode because obviously we had some things come up and it was like week three and we're like, yeah, we should probably get an episode out because, you know, we hadn't because I was sick and you were gone and there was just a lot going on and she wasn't home. So we did a recording over FaceTime.
Yeah.
She talked and I talked and I was like, okay, me being the editing genius.
The editing genius.
That I am. I'm not good at it. I was like, I'll edit it together. It'll be great. And so we recorded it. It was like 40 minutes long. It was great. I started editing it at 10:30 and deleted my half of it and then cried.
I know. I woke up to that text in the morning. Like, I deleted all of my audio. I was like, Rachel, it was great. I already like felt bad because we didn't come out with an episode like the week before. And then we were going to have one and then
I deleted it. Yeah. That is all on me that it's been so long since we've had an episode. And then May's just been a crazy month. I graduate this month. I guess
yeah,
April. It's
young
now
child.
April was a crazy month. I graduate this month in May.
I just took a bunch of exams. So my last month was just absolutely terrible. I'm not going to lie. It was just constant studying, constant papers. I've been slacking a bit.
But Aaron
is summer.
Soon home. I've said, yeah. Are you officially home for the summer?
Yes.
Okay. So look at that. We will get back on a weekly basis now, starting now.
Yes.
I promise.
As long as you don't delete the audio.
Okay. But here's the thing. We'll save it this time. I've learned my lesson. Save both audios, not just yours.
I can't believe. Okay. Yes.
Don't. I can't believe me because I also cannot believe myself.
Yeah. I get it. Okay. You have any updates?
Yes.
With college?
And no. Yes. Okay. Yes. So I actually don't remember. What last time we talked, what was I doing with my life?
I don't know, but you said so. I saw something on Instagram the other day.
Okay.
Are you going into theater education?
Away from. I changed my mind again.
Oh, God. Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I'm now going to do early childhood education with a concentration in theater and a minor in music. And I realized, ideally, what I would like to do is teach like third or fourth grade, just normal stuff, and then like run a high school or community theater. Like be the main person in charge of
that. The main person?
Yeah. So
this was recent thing then?
Yeah.
Okay, I was just really confused because I saw this thing you reposted on Instagram. You're like, Rachel Whirling, theater education. I was like, I didn't even know this. It happens.
It's been crazy. But I think, and every time I tell somebody this and I'm like, yeah, because they're like, oh, you're still doing this, right? And I'm like, no, not anymore. I'm changing my mind again. And they're like, oh, you'll change it a million more times. And I'm like,
yep.
I really, really hope not. I would like to
You probably will.
Settled. But I've committed to the lake campus near my house, which is like a 20-minute drive, and I have 21 credit hours of classes already done. So I'm just going to finish up my freshman year at the lake, and which Wright State Lake Campus, or as my boyfriend likes to call it, UCLA, which stands for University of Salina by the Lake. Almost.
Oh my God. I mean, he's not wrong.
Everyone's like, oh, where are you going to school? And he always cuts in UCLA. And they're like, wow. And I'm like, I'm not going to UCLA. He's like, yes, you are. University
kind
of Salina by the lake, almost. Oh, okay.
So you'll do that your freshman year and then you'll go to Dayton?
I'll go somewhere. I don't know where.
You don't know if you're going to Wright State University?
No.
I thought you were. I'm so confused.
I don't know. I'm going to the lake campus of Wright State for my first year.
We've yet to update you on that then. That'll be a future thing.
Yeah. You thought my college process was going to be over in May. Ha ha.
Wrong.
It's not.
The other thing I was going to say is we don't have coffee. Our problem is we always record on Sundays at like 6, 7 o'clock or sometimes like 8. And it just doesn't happen.
Occasionally 9.
I asked you, I was like, where you want to go for coffee? And then you didn't respond. And I'm like, hello, hey, hi. And so then I finally called you. You're like, I was napping. Rachel, you should have like brought coffee home from Muncie or something.
I wasn't thinking. Yeah. I wasn't thinking. I'm never thinking. Yep. And I'm always napping.
Yeah. My iron deficiency.
I'm anemic. You have to give me an excuse.
So anyways, but I am hoping to actually try more different kinds recently because I haven't really been drinking that much coffee, honestly. That was me.
That was an email,
I think.
Wow.
Okay,
what's new in your life?
What's new in my life? I just finished my second semester. Or no, my second year of college.
Second semester.
Sorry, second semester. Second year of college. So now I guess junior. I think I was already a junior, but like kind of or whatever. That you're gonna be like that too. So don't even give me that.
I'm gonna be pretty much a sophomore. So yeah, I feel
so. And then I have some maybe possible career updates, but not big enough
to announce. To
announce, yes.
Will you tell me afterwards?
Yeah, I'll tell you afterwards, I guess. But
wow.
Other than that,
you can sit in suspense of where I'm going to college next year and where Erin is doing
her. Where Erin is.
What Erin is doing with her life.
Yes. So you'll have to wait and see. But I think other than that, I told you my life is boring now.
You went to the Kentucky Derby and met an NFL player. You could, you know, talk about that.
Oh, yeah, I guess. So I went to the Kentucky Derby yesterday. And I guess this guy was, I didn't know he was an NFL player because I'm not super into football, obviously. And someone was like, that's Chase Claypool, who I guess plays for the Steelers. I don't know. So I just asked for a picture and he's like, sure. And that was it. It wasn't really anything that crazy. I don't know why he decided to go where general admission is because he was the most famous person in general admission. And literally everyone was going up to him like, are you Chase Claypool? So
you're going to have somebody who was like obsessed with Chase is his name.
Yeah, that's the Chase. Only reason I was so proud of it.
And you're going to be like, yeah, I have this photo. Look, it's of Chase. Yeah. And they're going to be like,
I heard he's. But the thing is I told my mom about it. And today she's like, I heard he's a big diva. I was like, I mean, probably. Same. No, like, but like mean. I don't know.
That's depressing.
He was just kind of, I don't know.
Was
honestly,
he mean to you? Was he passive aggressive?
At first, he was on the phone, so he wasn't like paying attention to anyone around him. But then when I asked him, he was just like, sure. He wasn't bad. It was his little friends around him that were kind of
his posse.
His little posse. I don't know. They're trying to act like his bodyguards, but they're like, they were the same height as me. And I'm 5'7", and this guy's like 6'4". You know, I was just kind of confused, but I'm like, you guys aren't going to protect him. Just saying.
I could beat him up right now. You couldn't take me, all you 5'7" people.
All you 5'7" people. So that's what I did yesterday. Or, yeah, that was yesterday. So fun. I recommend going to the Kentucky Derby. It's very interesting. I even got to see horses, which I guess is a big deal. Most people don't end up seeing the horses.
Wait, they go to the Kentucky Derby and don't see horses?
Because it's just a big party in the middle. And there's normally like, there was only 50% the amount of people that are usually there. So it was a lot less crowded. So I just went up right to the fence and watched it.
So it's the Kentucky Derby, but it's just more so of a party. Like people don't actually go for the horses.
No, people do. There's like, that's more for the rich people though. They sit in the stands and they place bets and whatever. But then a lot of people are like, a lot of college students just go there to party. Like myself.
That's nice.
Yeah. Wow. So that's it for me.
Love that for you.
Are you ready for today's episode?
Yes. So we may not have coffee, but I think we have something to make up for lack of coffee and lack of episodes the past like 4 weeks.
Okay, maybe like 3 weeks. Well, whatever, doesn't matter. So today we have a guest, and we haven't had a guest in a hot minute. We have John Walbolt here today, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his experience being in New York with theater and what he's all doing now. So, hey, John.
Hello. Thanks for having me on again. I'm happy to be here and happy to talk about my experiences in theater and share that with whoever for what it's worth. I think one thing I do have that I can share to people is if you're looking to move to New York and pursuing theater, I've had a lot of tough lessons here. And so there's a lot I think I can share about that. But yeah, I've basically followed the path that a lot of people who kind of go to college to pursue theater follow and do a few different things that eventually led them to New York. It's a crazy city. I'm here now. I've been here for several years. And I did some performing in a few different capacities. And now I've been focusing a little bit more on writing and directing and producing. And that has led to a few different things. So happy to talk about any of it.
Well, let's just start at the beginning. Yeah. When did you know that you wanted to pursue theater? And like, did you have any snags along the way, or how did you prepare for that?
So it was a little unconventional because I did theater growing up, but I went to college as an engineering major. And then basically when I got to choose what dorm to live in, I decided, well, I like the arts, I'll choose the arts dorm. Because all the other ones were like, the other themes were like leadership and like, I don't know, really things that I thought were boring at the time, you know? And the other one was like arts. And I was like, well, that's the one that sounds actually cool. And almost everyone I was living with at the time was involved in the performing arts. And so I just kind of got roped in, and I had just gone to New York the summer before. So I was really high on the whole Broadway experience. And there were a few things that kind of led me to it. Initially, I was just going to be I was going to pursue more of the production side, like set design. And then I just did performance classes for fun and I just loved it. And so I ended up graduating as a, you know, proper musical theater guy. I was just kind of hooked after that. So it was a bit of a late process for me compared to a lot of people who just are set on it from day one of their childhood or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think we actually had another guest on here. I don't know. This was a couple months ago, and he had a lot of experience with, I think like traveling shows.
Are you talking about Tori?
Yeah, Tori. But he always just wanted to be on Broadway, and he started training from a very young age and then just decided, oh wait, it's not for me. So I think sometimes, you know, you can train as young and put in all this effort and, you know, you never know, you're going to change your mind a million times, just like Rachel.
Okay. Thanks, Aaron.
I had to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of realities to the industry that I think aren't truly clear until you are confronted by them. Which is why when theater majors graduate, they see about a quarter to half of their classmates drop out of the industry within a year or two. Because, that's a pretty big topic that we could go into. But you know, the perspective of the whole thing changes. And I've known some people who realize that they fell in love with theater when they were sitting in the audience watching these amazing shows. And maybe that's actually what they want to do, is just they want to be around theater, but it's not necessarily just because they saw the performers and those were the subject matter doesn't mean in the long run that that's actually what they want to do. It does happen. I mean, and even for Broadway performers, they get on that stage and they're like, oh, okay, I guess, all right, this is it. So everyone has a different experience with it.
Mm-hmm. And what college did you say you went to?
UC Irvine. It's in Southern California. It's near Newport Beach and Disneyland.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, dang. down there.
It's far from here.
Yeah, yeah.
The other side of the U.S.
Yep.
Far from New York, too, yeah.
So is that where you grew up, in California?
I grew up in Northern California, a suburb of San Francisco.
So you really did move all the way across the country.
Yeah, I've moved all over the place. And after college, I was kind of all over California. I did regional theater for like about 2 years, mostly in Northern California. And yeah. And then from there, it just, it ended up being this weird path that eventually brought me back over to New York. Cause you know, I spent some time working at Disneyland. Then I spent a few years on cruise ships. Then I spent some time at Hershey Park. And then eventually it was like, okay, I need to stop moving all over the place. Like, is Broadway the goal or not? Because I'm not anywhere near New York. So that's around the time that after I did all those different crazy jobs, then it was like, all right, let's put some roots down.
Could you talk a little bit about your experience with the regional theater and, you know, Disney and
like auditioning too? Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. So most of the regional theater work I did was specifically in like the San Francisco Bay Area, which is a great theater community. But it, you know, each theater community around the country, I think is a little bit different. And specifically the way it works there is you have this really vibrant theater scene, or at least it was when I was there. I don't think you can make a living off of it. Everyone there who is a professional actor is also a teacher or something else. That's just the way it works. Cause theater there, the money is tight. The only place in theater where there's a lot of money is Broadway and Broadway tours. And I think that is true for most of the other regional theater areas. And the other thing is the West Coast has a totally different kind of tradition or the system than the East Coast in my observation, because the East Coast, I feel like there is this history of these sort of summer stock companies and even like cabaret circuits. And so if you are an actor who moves to New York, there's already like this built-in tradition of all these regional theater companies going to New York to hire talent. They know that they have to pay them and house them. So there's better opportunities in New York if you want to be on the East Coast. Whereas the West Coast, it's most of the time more what I was just talking about, where you have to take care of your money on your own, and you know, you might get some extra cash to like help, but mm-hmm. it's not going to be a living by any means. And so, you know, it's like, what do you think is better for you? You know, and I have some, I'll just say this. I don't think it's Broadway or bust for everyone, because I do have some friends doing the Bay Area theater thing, and they are much happier than 99% of New York actors because they figured out a job, they're taken care of, they don't have to stress about money, and they get to do theater all the time. They're doing like 3 shows a year, whereas I have all these New York actor friends who they might go 3 years without doing 1 show, and they're stressed about money. And after a while, it's just like, why am I even here? Mm-hmm. And even to that point, even the Broadway actors, like sometimes people get jaded. After a while, they're like, yeah, I've been doing the show for like 3 years, but I can't leave it because it's a sure thing. And so it's a tough thing. It's a really tough thing.
I bet. And I think the way Broadway is kind of painted and like perceived is everything's just so glamorous. And the actors, I feel like even as when I was younger, when I was dreaming, like I was like, oh, I'm gonna be on Broadway. And I thought of it as so great and wonderful. And I think though, the older you get and obviously the more experience you have, and I mean, you obviously saw that firsthand, you start to realize there is so much more to this. There's, you know, this isn't reality. And I'm sure there's definitely a lot of people who are very happy that they're on Broadway. But I mean, just to even hear you say you have friends who are in New York and they're actors and they're like, oh, what am I doing? It's very interesting perspective.
Yeah, people don't think about the amount that go to New York to be on Broadway. Like there's quadruple the number of actors who want to be on Broadway versus what there actually is. And I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Yeah, it's a tricky subject because I think part of what kind of covers that reality up is theater people who do these master classes with people who are successful, you know, they hear these stories of like, you know, just believing in yourself, and there is truth to that, but it's not the full story. And, you know, I won't name names, but someone was telling me a story recently of someone who, who's very famous, who basically graduated college, went straight to Manhattan and like just believed in themselves, and they booked their first job right off the bat. And it's like, well, maybe there were some other things that led to your success other than just believing in yourself, because I know 1,000 other people who believed in themselves and it didn't work out. And to touch on that, there's also this sort of unfortunate trend in theater where if you start to think about what are the real challenges that could come up for me, it's almost like you're giving up. It's almost like you're giving into the fear. But you know, as time goes on, you have to really check in and be like, okay, what is the situation I want for myself? Like, because I think we all get into theater because it makes us happy, but then sometimes to our detriment, we forget to make sure that it keeps making us happy. Yeah. So, you know, it's just about, for me, it's all about just like staying focused on what's the bigger goal and making sure that that's still happening.
Mm-hmm.
Now being in New York, do you have any experience with professional shows, or what have you really done since you've been there?
So in New York, let's see, in New York, I've done a couple really, really small off-Broadway things, like hole in the wall off, like stereotypical off-Broadway. and basically when I moved to this city, after traveling and performing, one of the first things I focused on was classes. And then after that, I really very quickly turned to writing and directing. And a lot of the stuff I've done in that realm has been smaller too. So I haven't worked on a Broadway project yet or anything like that. But I've done all the hole in the wall stuff, like Joey and Friends, when he does like some little small off Broadway play or something. Like I've done that sort of thing.
Could you talk about that? Like, I know that's a lot of people end up doing that, and we've never actually heard from somebody who's like been in New York and then done like the off Broadway stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's tough because, and this is another challenge of living in the city, is most of the time you're working as an actor most of the time you're working as like a waiter or something like that. And it directly conflicts with every show's rehearsal schedule. So most of the time people aren't even able to commit to one of these things. In my case, it was, well, two of them were these low commitment, like staged musical type things. That was a long time ago. And that was just like three rehearsals or something, sing in a basement. That was it. It was not a huge production like you would do today in a high school or a college where you get weeks and weeks to really sort it out. And then the play I did was, the last play I did, it was this thrown together Shakespeare production of Hamlet. And it was basically in a converted rehearsal space with like stackable chairs for the audience. And the rehearsal process was based on the history of Shakespeare theater and how they didn't really rehearse, apparently, how they would just have like a couple days together to make sure they were on the same page. And then they would just do it and just like live in the moment. And so I did one of those and we did like a series of performances, and it was crazy. It was, it was a far cry from the, you know, proscenium based theater with full costumes and all that stuff that I was used to in the Bay Area, in California. But I mean, it's sort of like you get to these tight places where there's all these restrictions on what kind of art you can do and what you can be a part of. And it's just sort of like, you just got to keep fighting and just sort of like, if this is where I can perform right now, like I'm going to do it. It is different. It is different. And that's part of the culture shock of being a performer when you move to New York.
Yeah, I'm sure. Are you still like doing a lot of performing, or you've kind of almost switched over to writing and directing?
So for the last few years, I was working at a place. Some people know it, some don't, but it's called Ellen Stardust Diner.
Oh yeah. My gosh. Yeah. We were there. We've been there before, actually.
Yeah, we were there together, actually, for our choir trip.
And you worked there?
I worked there, yes. I started working there about 4 years ago. And so once I started working there, like that kind of gave me my fill of performing, because I was singing like 4 or 5 days a week, you know, nonstop, and like 8 or 9 hours a day. So I was singing too much, basically. And around that time was, you know, I was surrounded by so many talented people. And that was part of what influenced me to start looking into, it was that and the classes I was taking. Because I realized, some of the classes I was taking, I was realizing that the way a lot of people actually break into the industry, especially with film, is they make their own stuff. They don't just like wait around where it's like the odds are 1 in 10,000 that they're going to get seen at this audition or whatever like that. They're just like, I'm going to take it upon myself and make something rather than wait for someone else to choose me. And along with that, I was very interested in how like Broadway shows were produced or music was produced. And so I was like, I just want to get my hands dirty and do something. And I was surrounded by so many really, really talented singers that the way I got into the more production side and creative side was just teaming up with some of the people I worked with and said, hey, you're awesome. I think I could do sort of the organizing business side of this if you want to put on like a concert or a cabaret or whatever. And it started with one friend just doing a concert for her. And then it was like every other month I started just banging out these small shows all over New York or Manhattan.
Yeah.
So I was performing all the time there, but it was also, it was kind of the transition too, oddly enough.
That was a really cool experience at Ellen's.
Yeah. And all of those singers, every single one, we might have
seen you. It was how many years ago?
2018. It was 2018.
Yes, I went to Europe in 2017. 2018. We were there in 2018.
I was there.
In April.
In April. Were you working in April?
Absolutely.
Maybe we did see you before.
It's very possible.
That's probably so crazy. Oh my goodness. Small world.
Yeah, no kidding.
I loved Ellen Stardust Diner.
That was one of my favorite parts of New York. It was, because obviously, like, you do have the Broadway, and, you know, that part's really cool. But then you see, you know, the actors who are trying to make it and found a way to be, like, a waitress or a waiter and perform all at once. And, you know, standing on the tables and singing.
And they're right there.
Oh, it was so cool. And they were all so incredible, too.
Yeah, it's a wild place. I mean, and it's like, there's no rules there. It's just, we would just go crazy. I mean, just, standing on tables, like nothing sanitary, just like walking wherever we want, but people loved it. So we had some wild times, and a lot of my closest friends are actually people I met there.
Now, what was that process like, getting a job there?
It was just, they had my headshot and resume for a few months, and then they called me in for an audition. They had me sing 2 songs, and like, it was like Friday night full, you know, and they said, okay, sing a song. And then they're like, okay, sing, we want to hear something else. So they sang a second song, and then they're like, okay, you passed the singing, so now you can do the normal like waiter interview process. But it was like, it was smooth sailing after that. It was just throw you in there and get to work.
That's so crazy to me.
Wow.
I love that.
All right. So along the way, I know you've kind of already talked about challenges that you faced and a lot of things that actors face, but was there any one specific moment for you that you kind of look back where you're like, maybe this isn't for me, or you almost gave up, or it was just a big challenge?
Yeah. I think there's been a couple things for me, and because when there are some times that I've performed in shows or when I was singing on cruise ships, where there was certain, like, if things go wrong, because sometimes people love you and sometimes people hate you. And it's a really tough business because we're emotional people and it's hard to stay focused and do a good job, especially when your voice, I mean, it's like an emotional instrument, right? And so it's really hard to perform under pressure. And I think that one tendency I had, this is kind of, I was kind of touching on this earlier about how people are afraid to sort of embrace certain realities because it, because it's like a sign of weakness or whatever. But the biggest thing I think I had to overcome was, it was sort of like 7 years ago where I was having a lot of tough jobs with tough performing jobs, dealing with some people that I thought were difficult. And I realized the importance of not blinding myself with my ego. And because it's a thing where it's like, you have to have confidence. You have to have confidence. I can do anything. I can do anything. But taking the time to realize that my instrument and my abilities as a performer are not, you know, I'm not Superman. Like, I have to realize, like, especially because, like with your voice, if, cause everyone, especially when you're younger, everyone is trying to sing as high as they possibly can. And there comes a point where you do damage. And I look back on some of my career, especially as a singer, and I've realized that if I didn't let my ego get the best of me, I would have actually been more successful because I would have been more efficient. I would have had a healthier voice and I would have just had more success rather than trying to do something more outlandish and trying to sing extra high notes and all that sort of thing. And a part of that, the bigger thing was just really taking the time to be self-aware and every now and then take a moment and think, are these tough lessons that I'm learning? Are these moments where I have to be confident and push through adversity? Or are these moments where I actually have to listen and realize that there's something about myself I have to change? Yeah. I know that's all a bit vague because I'm being a little, I'm keeping a little bit of the details to myself, but I'm trying to get across that message of like learning to take the time every now and then to be a little self-reflective, because I wish I had done that like, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I feel like I would have done so much better.
That's something that can be hard to hear, but
yeah. And there's such a, I feel like an obsession with, you have to stand out. And I think it gets in our minds like, well, I need to be able to belt the highest notes, or I need to be singing like Christine in Phantom. And it gets to the point where, you know, that might not be what your voice is made for. And you're just like pushing yourself. So I get what you're saying. I agree. I always feel that still when I'm singing, like I have to prove that I can, you know, either stand out or sing all these different genres because that'll make me the best. So I think that's very interesting.
I think that there's also this thing that happens a lot with theater people where they get so, and I'm really speaking about myself, but I see it in other people where we can get so ingrained in this idea of like, you know, our talent is natural and like we can just exude our will and that will shine through and make us stand out. And that's what makes us special. And, but really it's, I think it's, you know, it's more about like taking the time to just practice and practice and practice and not letting your ego think like, oh yeah, I can do anything, because I kind of what you're saying, like, I have to be the best, I'm the star. But I think there's a lot of strength. I've seen a lot of people who are the most successful are the people who don't have the ego, who are just like, no, I need to work on this. I need to work on this. I need to work on this. And like, and also, this is the part I'm right for. This is not the part I'm right for. Those are the people who really do the best and have the most fun, because they're not trying to be someone they're not.
That's a good point. I even wish I just would have thought about that sooner, even, because I feel, because, you know, obviously we have not had any experience like professional level, but I think sometimes it doesn't always matter, because singing is something we've both done for a really long time, and your talent becomes a part of your identity, and you kind of become so stuck on that. And everyone, mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is everyone expects you to be perfect. And I think you just have to accept that I'm not going to be able to do everything, and that's okay, but what can I do to be my best? So I'm really glad you shared that with us.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people can definitely relate.
Well, and I'll say this too. I've produced a lot of concerts and cabarets in New York City. And I've helped a lot of other people with shows of different sorts. I do not care. I tell this to everyone, even the people who are uber talented. I always am like, I could care less about how high your note, how high you can sing. It's something that you really learn as you get older. You really start to hear the difference between like if someone can sing a high, if someone can squeak out a high C, it doesn't matter. Like, what is the highest note that sounds awesome? And like, and like, that is all that matters. And also, it doesn't even matter if it's a high note. Like, what are the songs that actually like are fun and make you different? Because especially when you get to New York, there's too many people who try and do the same thing. And there's not enough people who just try and do what makes them unique. What's like, what's weird about you? What's quirky about you? You know, like that's, I mean, when I'm looking for people to work with or cast or whatever, that's all I want to know is like what it makes you different. Not like, oh, can you do the same thing as everyone else?
Can you sing that really high note? Well, guess what? A lot of people can.
Exactly. And most of the time it doesn't even matter. It's one note out of how many notes? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I've had multiple instances where I have just gone to someone and said, we're going to change that note. We're going to lower the key of the song. No one's going to know. Especially we're talking about Ellen Stardust Diner. Doesn't matter what notes we sing there. People sing really the low notes sometime, and people are like, oh man, they can sing so high. No one knows there are so few people who have perfect pitch in this world. Like, no one's going to know the key that you're in. Just get over it. Like, relax.
Yeah, that's a huge misconception that you see a lot with whether you are a soprano or a bass, or it's just, oh, in order to stand out, I have to do that highest note. But really, like, or if I want to impress people, I have to sing that high C, that high E. Or in all seriousness, if you just sing and it sounds good and beautiful, it doesn't matter how high or how low it is. Like, you don't have to hit those high notes. People are going to be impressed if you sound good.
Yeah, 100%. I think also, this is just random. I've said this before, but I think if you think about it, the audience is normally, I don't want to say stupid, but they're not going to notice every time you mess up, you just beat yourself up about it. And if you ask like your friend who was listening, they'll be like, what are you talking about? I didn't hear it. And I've been like terrible at this. And I think that's kind of the same thing. No one's going to be able to tell you brought that down a whole step. And even so, who cares if you were able to like connect with them, sound beautiful, like that's really all that matters.
And that's something I noticed just recently, because I am a soprano, so I do sing high notes. But just recently, did you see my Instagram post of the song that I did at the cabaret?
No.
Gosh, do you not pay attention to my Instagram?
No, I don't.
I sang To Keep My Love Alive from Connecticut Yankee. And that song is absolutely hilarious. There's no really impressive notes in it. It's like, it's kind of repetitive, but it was so much fun. And it got the biggest response from the audience because it was funny. And they're like, we could connect to it. And there was no high notes. Like, obviously it was in a comfortable spot in my voice, but I wasn't straining for anything. I had a blast singing it. A lot of people were like, wow, that's one of the best songs I've seen you perform. Like, it was so funny. And
I need to watch this video. Oops.
Like, it was a lot of fun. But yeah, it's like, that was something that just recently, it's like, well, normally I sing songs that are higher and I'll take a high note at the end because I can, and it normally sounds good. But in this case, I'm like, I'm a senior. This is my last cabaret. I'm not going to like try so hard. I know what I'm doing for college. Like, I'm just gonna go for it. And I loved the piece, I loved the song, and it got a great reaction.
There you go.
All that matters.
Proof right there.
So now you said that you direct like these little shows and everything. So now are you like on the other side now, instead of being the one that's auditioning? Are you kind of like holding the auditions, or how is that?
Yeah, I haven't needed to audition or hold auditions, because I know I've been in New York long enough that I know enough people where I can just be like, I can just call people and be like, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? And I actually prefer that, because then I'm not working with a stranger. I can pick someone I already have a certain amount of trust with. Although that's going to have to change in the future as things get bigger. I have one project potentially for the fall that might require some auditioning. The projects I've been involved with, like I was like last year, there was a virtual show, virtual off-Broadway show thing that I was involved with. And that, even with that, we were just, those of us involved, we were just calling people we had already worked with. And then some of the other projects I've worked on, which were sort of campy benefit cabaret / like jukebox musical style stuff that I do every holiday season. Those are also things where I just call up people I know and work with the talent I already know, rather than try and build a whole new relationship with someone from scratch. But yeah, I'm on the other side of it now. Like I'm not going to stop performing, but I have stopped auditioning, because it's not worth my time. Like I will write myself into my own stuff, you know? I mean, like Lin-Manuel's my idol. He did it. Like, that's the path I'm taking. I'm not going to wait around and sit. I mean, you go to these auditions in New York, you're sitting there for 6 hours. It's like, I could have written 6 pages of a script in that time.
True.
Yeah.
I'd rather do that.
Yeah. Lin is a perfect example of that. He's like, well, you know what? I'm just going to write all my stuff and
I'll just be the
star. Yeah.
Well, and think about his skill set. It's going back to what we were talking before. You know, I'm not trying to, this is all going to sound like backhanded compliments, but like, I don't know where he fits in a traditional Broadway system. Because he's a rapper. I mean, like he's a rapper and he's a star. Like he wrote stuff that was perfect for him. And now now people love him for it. But if he had gone in and just tried to sing Phantom of the Opera, I don't know. I assume he wouldn't have gotten it, but maybe I'm wrong. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that is a prime example where it's just like, I'm not even going to try and fit into this. I'm going to do my own thing. Mm-hmm. And people love that. And,
obviously.
Yeah. Also, like Michaela Cole is another great person who's a sort of a writer, actress. She has a few things on Netflix right now. Mm-hmm. There's a few people who are kind of lesser known, but I think Broad City did that too. I think Girls did that, where they just make their own stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I did that this year with
Musical. You should tell him about that.
I wrote, Mom, we have a super small drama department. Like, we're from a town with 2,000 people in it, and our school, like, we have about 68 people per grade. So it's,
wow,
very, very small. And our drama department is even smaller. We have a very sports oriented town as well.
Yeah.
And so we really were only working with two. We technically had three guys. One didn't sing. So one, so three actors, only two that sang. And then female wise, obviously there are quite a few girls, but a lot of them don't have training, or it was their very first show because they were freshmen. And we were really struggling because it's like, what show are we going to find that has three males, two who sing, one that doesn't sing, and then like just a few females that are like super strong and the rest who like maybe can branch their way into theater slowly. It's like, we're not going to find that. So I actually published a book recently as well. And so, and I have a friend who writes a lot of music, and we're both seniors, and we're like, let's just write a musical. So,
so you did, you really did.
That's really what happened. So we wrote the school musical, and we wrote two female leads, and, you know, we catered it exactly to the cast, and there were still auditions and everything, but nobody was mad about how the casting went out, 'cause that was kind of the whole point of us doing that, is we knew what cast we were working with. And we wrote a show that catered directly to that. And we had a lot of compliments on the show. They were like, that was one of the best shows that St. Henry has put on. And it's like, well, I mean, we did cater specifically to the cast that we were working with. But yeah, so that was, I feel that. That was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Look at you, Rachel.
I always forget that you do these things. I'm like, oh yeah,
in my free time, I published a book and, you know, wrote a musical. And
no big deal.
Have a podcast. It's fine.
It's fine. No, but that is a good example of it, though. You're right. I guess my big, like, last question would have to be, I mean, obviously you have these projects now, and, you know, having these shows, but you have apps on the App Store and a special on Amazon Prime. Like, I feel like you just do everything.
Well, you got to. I mean, it's like, you got to, I mean, you got to keep fighting for, and no matter, I mean, there's always going to be times where you're hitting a dead end, and then it's like, well, I can just give up now, or I can try and find another way. And so I just keep busy. And, you know, the apps is, I'm a total nerd. And so it was sort of like, well, I just want to make one for the sake of making one. And I ended up making two, and, you know, one's for singers, one's for guitarists, and they've done really well. And there's going to be more in the future that I'm currently working on. And then, yeah, my short film on Amazon, that was just sort of like kind of what I was saying before about some of the classes I took, were, you got to make your own stuff. It's so hard to do even an independent film, like get into one as an actor in New York. It's a whole ridiculous system. And so that was part of what inspired me to make my own. And of course the whole thing is called Non-Ec, and it's all about how terrible it is to be an actor in New York City, but it, like, in a fun way. And it was very fun to write and make. You know, it's write what you know. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to make this thing that playfully represents what it has been like to be in New York City as an actor. And so far, everyone I've talked to who's a New York actor has really, really liked it, because it really touches on exactly how you feel when you're out there and just hating life. But you keep going because you love it.
Yeah. Now, what are the names of your apps? You said Non-Ec was the name of the Amazon show, but
yeah, the apps are Pocket Pitch and Pocket. So the main one is Pocket Pitch, which is basically a pitch, pipe, and piano for singers, so that you just, if you don't have perfect pitch, I don't, but so if you need if you just need a note at the ready for whatever reason, you can use that app. And then that ended up doing really well. And so I made a sister app called Pocket Guitar Chords, because I play guitar, but I cannot remember every single chord. And so it was just like, well, I'll make this and then I don't have to memorize any of them. Then I'll just always have it.
We're both looking it up right now.
I'm pretty sure pocket pitch, I think I at least you. Wait, do I not have it? I've definitely used it before though.
Oh, really?
Yes,
oh,
cool. I definitely have. Like,
yeah, she has the download, like the when you have an app.
Oh, read the cloud.
Re-download.
Thing.
Yep.
Here I go. Okay.
Well, sweet. I'll definitely be re-downloading it too because I've been using just a little piano app when I need a note, and I just play. It's like a mini piano, and I just hit the note, and then it pitches.
I think for my old phone, I had too much storage, so I just like basically deleted everything. Yeah. But
and that's well, and it's such a like an idea that like people don't really think of. But it's like you definitely need it.
Yeah,
because like especially like when you sing the national anthem somewhere, even something as simple as that, it's a cappella. You don't want to go in starting thinking you're going to be doing normal and start say. So you just get your note with the pitch and it's there, done.
That's exactly right. And I've designed an update for it, which I wish I had a definite date to announce, have a big announcement for your podcast, but there is an update being done right now, especially because there's newer phones and stuff. So there's like different screen sizes and all this sort of stuff, but there will be a couple new features coming out soon too. So that's a semi public announcement about the world of Pocket Pitch.
So exciting.
I love that.
But those are some of my random projects that I'm involved in.
Well, if you have more stuff that, you know, comes up, you have to let us know so we can also, we want to stay updated with everything you're doing and, you know, let our listeners know about it too.
Okay, we'll definitely announce it.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I'll definitely let you know. I'm working on a few things right now. Right now, especially some scripts, and I'm not sure which one is going to get my full attention in the fall, but hopefully I'll have something more exciting to announce in a couple months. But right now it's too soon.
And if you have anything that comes up again, especially when it gets a little closer to that and you'd want to come on again, we'd love to have you.
Oh, sweet. That'd be awesome. Yes, thank you.
We love having guest stars because normally it's just us two, blah, blah, blah.
And we're so blah, much, blah, blah. Our composure is just so much better. So this is us probably at our best.
I don't know if you've listened to any of our other episodes or not, but we are just, we're a mess in a lot of them. And so, you know, when we get a speaker, we're like composed for the most part. It's like, wow.
So someone who isn't a mess that's here. It's great.
So
we're all a mess in this world. It's just, I put myself together for this.
Not the only one.
Also, I feel like you said that you did have coffee today. And since we didn't have coffee to talk about.
I did.
Would you like to share your coffee?
Yeah. It's this indie brand that not many people have tried before. They also sell pastries. It's called Dunkin' Donuts. And I bought it at my local CVS. Awesome.
Love that.
It's the same way every time. It's
Dunkin'
really
Donuts.
Good.
I don't think I've ever heard of it.
No.
Sounds new to me.
Very, very, must be a small brand.
I'm probably pronouncing it wrong.
Well, I'm glad someone decided to drink coffee today.
Someone was responsible and, you know, went with the name of the podcast.
Yeah. So, did you have anything else you wanted to let them know or?
No, I mean, I think you brought up all my main stuff I've been working on. So I really appreciate that. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate it.
Well, I guess I'll just say if anyone wants to see what I do in the future, they can just find me on Instagram and it's my name, John Wobbled.
Which is John, J-O-H-N, Wobble, yep. W-A-L-B-O-L-T.
We'll put it in the episode description too.
Oh, nice.
So perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yes, of course. So, Rachel.
I think that about wraps up today's episode.
Yeah.
Hopefully this makes up for our lack of episodes.
Yeah, hopefully. I think it will. I think it will.
I think this was a good episode to make up for it.
Okay, so I think that's it.
Yes, thank you again, John.
And
thank you again.
We'll see you all next week.
Next time.